Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mark.
Well, that is great to hear. You know, I've got a little bit of deja vu on today's topic. I know that we have another regional center on today. Is that correct?
Well, yes and no.
Oh.
I want to have lots of different regional centers on this show, as you know, Mark, because every regional center has a different opinion and a different perspective. But today's regional center is very different.
That makes sense, because I understand a vast majority of EB5 investors actually do invest in regional centers, which is why we cover a lot of different regional centers and a lot of different topics and the ways in which they do things.
Well, actually, Mark, it's more like 92% of all EB5 investors go through a regional center. And the majority of projects now, although we have a handful of direct pooled, majority of projects do go through a regional center.
Exactly. That was my point, is most of the investors go, you know, through the regional center model.
Right.
Well, today joining us to dive into different aspects of regional center is Samuel Silverman. Sam leads EB5 Affiliate Network, an award-winning EB5 consulting firm with extensive experience structuring EB5 projects across the United States. EB5 Affiliate Network owns and operates 15 regional centers covering 21 states and sponsors high-quality EB5 projects. Sam has considerable real estate development, management, financing, and brokerage experience in the U.S. and internationally in China. Sam, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me. It's good to be here today.
Great to have you.
Sam, I started the whole podcast today by saying you're very different. And yes, we know that you're very different, but would you like to explain what makes you different from other regional centers?
Sure. Thank you, Mona. Like you mentioned earlier, many regional centers in general, there are many different components to successfully assembling and structuring an EB5 project. In most cases, you've got kind of three parts. You've got the regional center license,
right,
project documentation, and
right,
then you've got the actual investor, right? And so many regional centers are kind of focused on the first of those three parts, maintaining their license, finding good projects to sponsor, and maintaining their license with USCIS. Our approach is a little bit different in that we own and operate 15 regional centers, but we also work in the documentation and also on the investor sourcing side as well, with offices in China. And so we're a little bit different in that we're kind of looking at each piece of the EB5 project value chain and not just focused on one piece, in which case, most cases, it's just the regional center license.
What makes EB5 affiliates different is that you have 15 regional centers and you are our go-to people to when we have somebody who wants to rent a regional center.
Yeah. And what we do that's a little bit different is that Many regional centers are really focused just on the operation of their regional center and maintaining compliance with USCIS. We're focused not only on operating the regional centers that we own, but also on working on the documentation required to bring projects to market, and also working directly with agents and brokers overseas who actually investors.
Wow, Sam, that means you're taking our job away with doing the project documents.
No, we don't like to step on toes, but we do work with a lot of immigration attorneys and securities attorneys in this space. And since we own the licenses and have seen quite a number of projects come through, we like to think of ourselves as kind of the glue that helps to piece some of these different projects together.
Well, that's pretty good. That's a pretty good adjective, I would say. And you do mention that a lot of your regional centers cover entire states. That's very difficult to get nowadays.
Yes, we kind of figured out how to get larger geographic coverage areas and get USCIS to see eye to eye with us on how you would go about proving the justification for those larger areas. And we've replicated it recently for some clients who've wanted larger coverage areas. But in general, it tends to take a lot longer and result in more RFPs
Oh, yeah, yeah. We never recommend doing large geographical areas, that's for sure. Would you say that you actually get the majority of your business through rentals?
I would say that most of our clients touch our rental of the regional centers. We do quite a bit of the documentation as well. It's probably close to 50-50, I'd say.
Mm. Well, we've discussed renting versus putting your own regional center up on these podcasts before, but it is a topic which is coming back over and over again, and especially as there are so many changes which are coming into regional centers. And because we do get a lot of project developers who may have just a single project, we are very keen on telling people, go rent, don't go and put your own regional center up.
I think that makes sense because a developer can focus on the successful completion and execution of their project and not so much running the regional center. But Sam, since this is your day job, what do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Many developers, you know, they're in the development business. They're not in the operator regional center business. And just given the timeline that it takes to get a regional center approved today, you know, anywhere from 12 to 15 months, depending on how large of a coverage area and how you've structured the application, you know, to rent a regional center, what we do is we charge an upfront fee, which is basically equivalent to what it would cost to just file a new regional center. And then you're going to wait, you know, 12 to 15 months to get the license approved. Plus, you're going to pay the fees to do all the documents and prepare the application. It really doesn't make sense in most cases to set up a new license for a first project. But in cases where the developer has several projects or a bigger project that's kind of at least 6 months to a year out in terms of when they'd be seeking capital, we've done a number of structures where a developer will utilize our regional center, you know, for the first project or part of the first project and file a new regional center. And then once approved, switch over from our regional center to their own once their own gets approved.
Yeah, well, Sam, because we deal a lot with projects and we're always asking different regional centers how much they charge to rent, usually because a developer has a preference. We notice one big thing is that your charges are a lot less than a lot of the regional centers in the market. Do you have any thoughts about some of the high fees that are out there at this point? I mean, I'm talking about high fees for rentals.
Yeah, we've seen a number of different pricing structures. And because, you know, there's a large number of regional centers in different areas, there's pretty high variability in the pricing. Our approach on that front is just transparency. When we rent a regional center, we charge an upfront fee of $20,000 and then a per investor fee of $5,000 one time per investor.
Now, that's very reasonable. That's very reasonable. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We like to keep it consistent. And so all the prices are published. And, you know, what we've noticed is a lot of other regional centers will kind of just off the cuff quote prices based on the situation. And so we just don't like that approach.
Well, the going rate, actually, if you want to rent a regional center, is 1 to 2% of the money capital raised per annum. That's a lot more money than just one-shot fee of $5,000 per investor.
Yep, that's right.
Well, let's talk about that. That 1% or 1 to 2% capital raise, you know, per annum per investor, and some of the services that a regional center offers. Let me ask you this, Sam: do you also offer the marketing services to go out and get those investors as part of your regional centers?
We've done that a number of times in Florida, but we're not really seeking out new clients for that. We've got enough projects that we like currently. So it is something that we do look at, but at this moment, we're really happy with what we're doing now with our partner.
Mark, for your information, if you have a regional center who going out and marketing for you, the current rate at this point is 5 to 6% of the capital raise.
You're right. We had covered a little bit of that before, but I just wanted to say it out loud and kind of explore to see if marketing was covered or not. But again, with the low, you know, $200K up front and $5K per investor, that leaves a lot of marketing opportunity for the projects themselves to go out or within their network and then leverage the, we'll say, the economies of scale of a regional center and literally the economies of jobs to be able to use those indirect and induced jobs for the projects themselves.
Right, well, Sam, what is your opinion on some of these fees then? If a regional center is going out and charging 5 to 6% to raise capital, we love to hear everybody's different views on this.
Sure. A lot of agents in China and overseas, you know, currently, you know, the rate to to actually pay agents anywhere from, let's say, 2 to 3% annually per investor. So a lot of our clients will say, okay, you know, I'd rather just be the general partner and be the one in charge of finding investors myself. And instead of paying a regional center, you know, 5, 6, 7% all in and betting the entire success of my project on one company, the regional center, to go and find the investors, I'd rather just bet on myself and be the issuer myself and then rent a regional center and then be in full control of how much I want to pay agents. And, you know, instead of paying 6-7%, you could end up paying half, almost 2-3%, and, you know, you're right in full control.
Right.
I have a question, and I know if an investor is listening right now, they're probably going to be shouting the answer to me, and I'm sorry, I can't hear you. So I'm going to ask both Mona and Sam, although they're not investors. I personally believe that investors, they invest in projects and not regional centers. The regional center is really just the mechanism to leverage some of the indirect and induced jobs and some of the streamlined efficiencies of the EB-5 petitions. But, you know, really when they make investment decisions, it's around the project. So I can kind of see how it would, and Sam, maybe I'm making your case for you, but I can kind of see how it makes sense for a project developer to focus on their project development and execution as well as outreach. What do you think, both Mona and Sam?
Well, Mark, that's a yes and no answer, actually, because there are some of the more well-known regional centers where somebody would just go and invest for the sake of being with that regional center. I've seen that several times.
Okay.
But lately, I have to agree that a lot of the investors who are coming into this space are more project savvy. And I think that has to do with the fact that there are a lot of new markets opening up. It isn't just China and Korea and your handful of regional centers. It's new markets from India and the Middle East and Latin America, where they're actually asking questions and they're looking and speaking with the developer, or the developer themselves have a few local ties and they're utilizing those local ties and then going out and renting a regional center like Sam's.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. Many of the larger regional centers that have done quite a few projects, they really try and emphasize their, you know, regional center track record. But the reality is that doesn't really have anything to do with the quality of the current project that's being sold.
Correct.
So, you know, it's not difficult to, you know, develop a large, you know, regional center track record. All that means is that you've been in the industry for a longer period of time. It doesn't really have any, you know, impact on the quality of the project itself, right? So it's much more important to focus particularly on the financial and immigration risk aspects of the particular project and, you know, make a decision around that project and those specific investment terms. A lot of the larger regional centers, you know, they've been around longer, but they don't have very good favorable terms for investors.
Right. Sam, how do you vet projects coming into EB-5 affiliates?
We have a number of kind of intake forms and diligence questionnaires that we use to kind of get the preliminary information, and then we review the entire set of offering documents and the 5-6 template that each investor would be filing. But most importantly, you know, we run background checks on everyone involved. So when we look at projects, we're really focused on evaluating the immigration and the financial risk profile of the project. So from the immigration perspective, we want to determine what is the risk that this project does not create the required number of EB-5 jobs that, you know, they're saying that they're going to create and are needed so that each investor gets their green card without any issues. What does that really mean? It means, you know, what's the structure of the capital for the project? What's the likelihood that all the capital is already in place or will be in place shortly once investors start to invest? Are there, you know, quality attorneys and other parties involved? What's the developer's track record if successfully getting financing for the project? There are a number of kind of sub questions that help frame that answer. But the main thing is the project going to create the number of jobs without a problem?
Well, you know, it's really interesting that you're saying all of this, that you're looking at all of these factors, Sam, because I know that there are many regional centers out there which will take on a project without really checking anything.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the case. I'd say we turn away about half the projects that come to us that want to be sponsored. It comes down to either an immigration risk issue or a financial risk issue that, you know, the project is just too risky, and there's too high of a chance that, you know, the investors are going to, you know, lose capital or potentially not have the right control mechanisms in place if something, you know, doesn't go according to plan.
Sam, I think that everything you're saying really makes a lot of sense. But another reason that I often suggest that a person looks very carefully once they've decided to rent, that they look very carefully at the regional center, is because of really one of the hot topics of today, RC termination, that USCIS are terminating RCs left, right, and center.
And that means, Mona, that a regional center is an operation. It probably has projects. It may have investors.
Right.
But USCIS comes in and terminates it, right? Just to make that clear and put the stakes on the table. That's what we're talking about.
That's correct.
Oh,
that's correct.
Okay.
And that's happening an awful lot. It's happening for a couple of reasons, Mark. It's happening because of perhaps that regional center is really not doing anything, and they're terminating it for lack of economic activity, yeah. I think is...
Sure. No investors at risk there, okay? But those that are...
Yes. Well, if there is an element of perhaps some wrongdoing, some fraud, you know, or even what USCIS would call national interest, they have the ability to just terminate a regional center. So that has caused a lot of upset lately, because there have been a number of older regional centers which have had issues, and they have been issued with termination notices. So what that means is that if somebody has a project in that particular regional center, or if there are investors in that regional center, what happens to them? Because changing a regional center is a what's classed as a material change, and it would mean that somebody would have to refile. If an investor refiles, they lose their place in the queue. If they've already got their 526s approved and their green cards approved, then they have a major problem. If they're from mainland China, then perhaps they really have a problem because their child is aged out. The aging out could happen from any country.
Yeah. So when we think about regional center termination, right, you know, there are a number of different reasons why a regional center could be terminated. And so as a regional center operator, we want to make sure that, you know, we're clearly in compliance with USCIS and make sure that there is activity with projects, you know, happening on each of our regional centers, so we don't face, you know, any termination issues. And then also that all of the projects are, you know, creating jobs and are in compliance with USCIS. In addition to the annual I-924A form requirement that USCIS requires all regional centers to file every December, we also have a quarterly compliance checklist that is signed and kind of processed by each of our active projects every quarter throughout the year. So we have a firm kind of pulse on what's happening with each project. So if there are any questions or additional we can get that within that quarter instead of just wait once a year to see what's happened.
Right. Well, actually, non-compliance is a reason also for termination of a regional center. But the good thing is as you may know, and as we mentioned, Mark, in one of our earlier podcasts, that there has been policy manual changes by USCIS, and at least USCIS have finalized some policy which is in many respects favorable to investors and developers in case of termination. But I would always recommend going to a regional center where you don't even have to go through all of the hassle of facing the consequences of termination.
Yeah, termination is real, and it can really impact and negatively, you know, affect investors' immigration status. And so we faced a number of situations where, you know, a regional center was terminated and the project sponsor and investors, you know, were looking for, you know, another regional center to sponsor the project. And, you know, after doing our diligence review, we were able to get comfortable with the project that whatever was causing a non-compliance issue in the past had been resolved. And then we were able to extend our sponsorship and kind of save the investors from termination of their, you know, immigration status as a result of the regional center, you know, going under.
Sam, have you ever picked up projects after the 526 has been approved, which are from regional centers which are being terminated?
Yes, we've done it both ways, where investors are pending with 526 applications not yet approved, and also with investors who have gotten their 526 and are either waiting to file their 829 or in some cases have also filed their 829 as well.
Mm. One of the big issues, though, I think today is the fact that there are just so many regional centers out there, and regional centers which are doing very little, and they're perhaps trying to make a quick buck by renting their regional center out to a project, and then unfortunately they go out and get terminated. So it's definitely a very real thing, and it's something that I would certainly suggest to any all our listeners, developer listeners as well, that if you're in a if you have a project and you want to rent, just make sure you choose the right regional center to rent.
Yeah, Tim, when you look at selecting a regional center, it's really important to pick a company that you're comfortable is in EB5 for the long haul and is not going to, you know, disappear overnight, right? Most of these investments are, you know, 5 to 7, 8, 9 years potentially. And so you want a company that is up to scale and, you know, has the ability to remain compliant and in business over that entire duration.
So Sam, obviously USCIS is cutting down on the number of regional centers. They're terminating those that either aren't functioning or perhaps aren't functioning the way they should, as well as coming up with new regulations and increasing some of the cost. And you've mentioned before earlier on this episode that your costs are, well, and your process is pretty transparent. You charge about what it would cost somebody to start up a regional center. You mentioned currently it's $20,000. For somebody to rent a regional center and $5,000 per investor. So how would some of these upcoming policy changes and new requirements for regional centers, as well as the increased cost for regional centers, whether it's both setup or renewal fees, how do you see that as impacting EB5 affiliate network?
That's a really good question, Mark.
I pay attention and take notes.
Yeah, so there are a number of policy changes that are being discussed for regional centers going forward, right? One of them is just increased transparency and reporting requirements on an annual basis. And so we really think that's going to be a positive for the industry overall and also to kind of our business model, because we're already kind of going above and beyond what's required from a regional center in terms of strict reporting requirements. So I think that's going to kind of make it more difficult for smaller regional centers that, you know, don't have a lot of activity to really maintain that same level of compliance, you know, with fewer projects. And then on the second point about increased kind of future costs, as you know, this is the first year and this coming December when there's going to be an annual kind of I-924A annual filing fee of, I think it's like $3,200 or so. Mm-hmm. But there's also talk of an increased additional annual fee of $10,000 to $20,000 per regional center. And so we also think this is going to be a positive overall because two reasons. One, you know, a lot of the regional centers, you know, are smaller and aren't really up to scale with the number of projects. And since it's been basically free to maintain the license up until now, we think those fees will cause a lot of people to just abandon their license mm-hmm. and kind of shrink the number of total licenses in circulation. And then secondly, all of our active projects that are on any of our regional centers, all of our agreements have a fee split provision where any future USCIS fees are split pro rata per project. And so any of those fees would be essentially billed as a pass-through directly to our project. So it's not going to negatively impact our company financials on an annual basis.
Right.
So I think those two factors will drive more business to us and also allow us to continue to grow now that we're already kind of at scale.
I can see that. And I can see why both the investors and the project managers and the project developers would appreciate that. Just that increased transparency. Obviously, USCIS is pushing this onto you. You're spreading it across the other projects.
Yeah, it's important as well, Mark, because I think a developer has enough to worry about without having to have add this particular element as well. So it's a good component, and I really applaud EB5 affiliates for bringing this on the market, because there really isn't anyone else out there who do what EB5 affiliates do, and I'm saying this while you're on air still, Sam. So yeah, good kudos. That's a nice American word.
Thank you. Yeah, we appreciate it. Yeah, we're just trying to keep it transparent and just make sure everyone has the information to make the right decision for their project.
So obviously setting up a regional center is challenging to somebody who's never done it before, and it's also expensive. But it's nice to see that those challenges can be taken care of by EB5 Affiliate Network, and those expenses, although are still paid, are transparent. Sam, thank you so much for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB-5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB-5 Investment Voice.